You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.
All right, welcome to another Football to the Max as we continue down the road of the offseason and NFL free agency as it's starting to, the craziness at least is winding down. There's still things going on and we'll talk about those. We've got our first college participant, football-wise, that decided to test the law. And it's somebody you wouldn't expect. And we're also talking about some of those, of course, the teams that we're continuing with this NFL offseason analysis that we're doing. We've got the Panthers and Tampa Bay Bucks today. And we'll have the Saints and Falcons on the Thursday night, Friday morning show. So, and we'll also do our March Madness brackets at the end. So if you're one of those, and I know there's tons of people that are doing March Madness, it's the only time they watch college basketball. That's the only time I think all three of us watch college basketball. It's great entertainment to have on in the background while you're doing other stuff, at least, if anything. We are not experts at all. We are totally just going by the seat of our asses. But those are fun. So, guys, what has been happening? How was your weekend? How have things been going?
I just found out I recorded a podcast that didn't record. So that's starting the week off, you know, stellar.
Yeah, I was part of that podcast. Now I feel like I wasted my breath the whole time.
Yeah, it's your fault. We're blaming you.
Of course.
All the other recordings are going just fine. Yeah. You know?
Since we're blaming Sean, hey, can you please make sure this podcast is still recording? That way we're not wasting our breath now. Oh, man. It's been a crazy weekend in a way because I've just been busy. You know, daughter had her friend's birthday party to go to. I wasn't feeling well. I got to the weekend. I'm feeling a lot better than I was then. So that's a positive thing. But, you know, just kind of one of those crazy weekends going on.
Yeah, for sure. Other than podcasts, it's had a lot of writing reviews and us doing podcasts on Saturday. Pulled an all-nighter on Saturday and then went to work and crashed at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Always great to have to do one of those. So there you go. You can't say we aren't dedicated to you guys, the listeners. Anyway, so we should go ahead and move to talking about this stuff that's been going on free agency, and at least for now, the successor to Brock Osweiler is none other than Mark Sanchez. Let's all give a golf clap to Mark Sanchez there.
Hey, can we do poetry snaps? There you go.
And we should just have Gary do all the sound effects.
Yeah, that's.
So, Randy, I mean, you watched Sanchez in his early years when they were actually winning championships, and then you also got to see him do the butt fumble. I mean, so which Mark Sanchez do you think we're going to get? Because the one we got in Philly wasn't that great.
Well, I mean, it's tough to say that he wasn't that great just because, I mean, he never really got that chance. Sanchez works better when he doesn't have somebody that's trying to take his job. Like, And you go back to the 2 years where the Jets made the AFC Championship game. Yes, most of their success came from their defense. I mean, obviously they were using a rookie and very young quarterback, but his backup was Mark Brunell. They had no worry about ever losing his job. The moment they started bringing in the Geno Smiths and the Tim Tebows of the world, where everyone started clamoring for them, Mark Sanchez then overthinks things. So if they go out and get like an RG3 and then go, well, Sanchez, you're starting, but we have RG3 as your backup, he's going to fail. That's just how he's made up. But if they go, this is your team this year, we're going to go sign a young rookie quarterback who you don't have to worry about this year, maybe next year, and have John Elway really kind of work on his mental game. He has the physical abilities to be a decent to good quarterback. He just overthinks things, and then he lets the pressure get to him.
You know, I really kind of followed Mark Sanchez here and there. Of course, Randy has a better view of him, you know, following the Jets closer and really paying attention to his career on a whole. I've really had an opportunity as a fan of a team in the NFC East to really get to view him on a more regular basis from a couple of years ago, especially when he had to fill in and take over the position at main quarterback and get things going for the Eagles. So I don't know if this is really a bad move. I think that Sanchez is definitely a credible quarterback. I still think he's mistake prone. I still think that psychologically, I don't know he's going to win you a championship. I think he's a serviceable quarterback. I think he is a guy that's a transition guy. He can probably lead them possibly to the playoffs because he can definitely do that. But besides, you know, the Super Bowl wins, I think he's credible. I think he can get you to those championship games. I think he can do those kind of things. I just don't think he can get into a Super Bowl game and actually win it. But, I mean, like I said, he's a transition guy.
Yeah, I mean, do you guys actually think he will be the starter, or do you think they wind up finagling Kaepernick, who they right now think is a fourth rounder, and the 49ers are still asking for a second rounder, last I checked?
I think at this point Denver is okay with having Sanchez as their only quarterback, or as their main quarterback. This allows them to not have to stress, not have to overpay for another quarterback. Now, I think they probably still will be going out and searching. Sanchez is not the overall answer. But now they have a little bit of wiggle room. It's not going, well, if we don't go out and get Kaepernick, we're going to be stuck with this third-string quarterback from some CFL team. So this gives them a little bit of space now to kind of take a breath and then allow the 49ers to feel the pressure and maybe bring their price down.
All right. Gary, what do you think?
Yeah, I don't know that right now that they're going to be so focused on giving away the farm now for Kaepernick. I mean, sure, I think they're tempted, but, you know, this is always a standoff when it comes to getting trades done. I've heard, you know, I just recently heard a scout talking about the fact that he has done these kind of trades. He's been on the phone with the team, and teams will trade a lot, and the next day they'll call and say, no, sorry, we're not doing that. It's just it's kind of one of those situations where really teams really overthink it at times, and they want the most for their buck. And you should want the most for your buck, but teams are not willing to do that. Most teams want a deal. I don't think that Denver is going to be able to get the deal from the 49ers that they want to get. So I think Sanchez is going to be the guy.
Yeah, I have a feeling that Sanchez will wind up being the guy as well. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if they wind up getting that deal worked out with Kaepernick, whether it winds up being something in the draft even that they work out, because that's always possible, or whatever it is. You know, Sanchez will be there, and he will be a factor, I think, going forward. Another signing kind of came out of nowhere. Too bad I didn't get a chance to ask Robert Hagen about it, but Eric Weddle going to the Baltimore Ravens, certainly not a place I thought he would wind up.
Yeah, I mean, I did not really expect it either. I saw a few other teams really looking for his services. The Ravens weren't one of them, but what a great move for the Ravens. They needed this kind of leadership. They needed a guy of this kind of quality on that defense. Solid move, if you ask me. It was, like you said, Sean, out of left field. No one saw that coming. I think it's fine. I think it's a smart move on their part.
What do you think, Randy?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's going to fit well there. They needed so many pieces, but it's definitely a step in the direction because that division is looking more and more wide open as things kind of come along. It seems like it's on the downturn a little bit.
So B.J. Raji going to retire. Kind of a loss for the Packers there.
Yeah, we can't speak that name in my house right now. since my girlfriend is a Packers fan and is not very happy with what is going on right now. So I can't speak that name.
How does she feel about like the Packers really haven't done a whole – I mean, that's what they do. But they haven't done a whole lot in free agency after, you know, that big deal that was made with McCarthy and all that, saying that they needed to change their ways a little bit.
I think she's as much worried about, like, bringing in a lot of people. She's always more worried about losing some key players. Like, what is it, James Starks? Am I getting the right running back? Might be going to New England. And she's worried about that. And then
Lacy better... better make sure he comes in safe then.
She's definitely one of those where once they're on the team, she wants them to stay no matter what, rather than bring in the huge free agent. So losing somebody like Raji is a bigger deal than not making that big splash in free agency.
Yeah, BJ Raji's been there.
She gives me a sad face from the other room.
Aww.
Well, somebody that's sad right now is Big Ben. Is Martavis Bryant suspended a year? I think for the substance abuse. Is it substance abuse or
yeah,
the other?
Yeah, it was substance yeah. abuse.
Jeez, after everything that you're looking at, last year with the three receivers all working great, you had the injury to Antonio Brown in that last game, and then you're going, oh man, all three of them working in sync, and then you're going to lose Martavis Bryant for a year.
It's just amazing. It is just wild because I never really thought this guy would be in this situation. He's such a great young player. I mean, that offense is amazing already. With him gone, it's just a shame. I'm sure they can find somebody maybe to plug in the hole, but with a young talent like that, the speed that he has, the ability that he has, he's going to be missed. And, I mean, you got to commend him. And I know his agent probably talked to him, his group, the Players Association's probably talked to him, and maybe he said, hey, you can try it, but really – trying to win a case like this is pretty much unwinnable. He made the decision just to be respectful, take the suspension, and just go with it. Probably a smart move because think about this, guys. Think if he waits a little longer and doesn't take the suspension, goes to the case, deals with all the rigmarole, and then it gets closer to football season, and then he stays suspended. That means a year from then, he would just be coming out of suspension by the time training camp would roll around. That's not good. That doesn't help his teammates. It's smarter to do it now.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously the decision to do what he did was dumb, but at least he is basically owning up to it and going, all right, let's just get this over with, and I'll see you guys next year. So tough for Pittsburgh to lose a talent like that, but at least there, he's just getting through it and not dragging it on. So now they know that they need to replace him.
Yeah, so now the NFL's competition committee is looking at more ways to protect the quarterback, including low hits that happen in the pocket. I guess they don't get protected enough with the low hits. I thought that was kind of a thing already. But, I mean, geez, you might as well just start having a protective halo around the quarterback at this point. Or,
Well, yeah, I mean, I agree. It's ridiculous at some points because you got to find a way that this game can still be exciting, still have some kind of credibility when it comes to getting to the quarterback, because if this continues, we're looking at the NFL becoming arena football, because you'll never get to the quarterback. The quarterback can never basically be touched. He could stay back there all day and not worry about a thing, because if anybody hits him from any point, oh, that's illegal, this is illegal, you get a fine, you get a fine. If I'm a defensive tackle, defensive end, if I'm a linebacker, I'm looking at my paycheck and saying, you know what, it's not worth it. If I'm just going to slap the guy in the back, and if he doesn't fall down, I'm just going to go with it, because I don't want to lose my money.
Yeah, I just get ready for more of the quarterbacks need flags debate.
Oh, Jesus, don't do that, please.
Yep, that'll be the way that Tom Brady plays when he's 45.
Yeah.
Is just never get hurt at all, because you will never be touched. Dax Prescott, DUI, arrested, and now people are wondering about whether this is going to affect his draft. Where he gets drafted and everything. Do you think it does?
Yeah, absolutely. You see this all the time where a kid makes a terrible decision and he starts just falling down the draft board until somebody goes, okay, let's give it a shot. I wouldn't be surprised if he loses two rounds based off of this.
Oh, yeah. I'm right there with him on that, because Randy makes a point. There are teams out there looking for quarterbacks, and trust me, they want guys with big talent. Prescott's got a lot of talent. But as we look at it now, we've got a number one quarterback in the draft that is sitting at home right now because he couldn't get his life straight. Drinking problems, things like that, led to abuse of women. They don't know Dax Prescott that well. They're just now trying to learn him. Maybe they fear that the same thing would happen to their franchise and they would waste the draft pick, even if it was, you know, a second round pick. He may fall two rounds. I would be surprised if he fell any further than that, but you never know. You just never know.
Yeah. Apparently the Broncos do want to sign Ryan Fitzpatrick, but he's asking for too much or something. So maybe there's still hope there, Randy.
Well, I mean, he's asking for too much for the Jets, too, right now. So it's just a difficult situation.
Your girlfriend will not be happy that Casey Hayward from the Packers is not going to the Chargers for 3 years, $15 million. I always thought he was pretty good playing for the Packers. I mean, that would be a good addition for the Chargers, obviously having death back there. So, and C.J. Anderson officially signing with the Dolphins now, even though apparently the Chicago Bears offered him more money, Gary.
Wow. You know, I think it comes down to the fact of, you know, who had the best sell. And really, the Dolphins may have had a better case, and they may have promised him more.
I think also Bears, you don't want to be playing second fiddle to Langford.
Oh, you just said it right there. You took the words right out of my mouth, Sean. Langford's the guy right now in Chicago. Fans are surrounding them with, you know, him with love. The coaching staff loves Langford. C.J. Anderson would be a nice addition, but I know C.J. Anderson wants to be the featured guy. He had already dealt with the round robin situation when it came to playing for the Denver Broncos. So now he goes to Miami. They need a lead guy. I don't think that the coaching staff sold on him. So C.J. Anderson wants to sell him on himself. I think that's why.
Kobe Flinner goes after some of his teammates, saying that they were along for the ride last season, questioning their intensity as players. And Jarrell Freeman, who just signed with the Bears. So two players who are no longer with the Colts, arguing back and forth against each other about whether they were giving it 100% or not. Isn't that a little bit of kind of silly at this point?
I can honestly see where Flinner's talking about. I mean, you lose your main quarterback, and yeah, maybe they won a few games with Hasselbeck that we didn't think they were going to win, but they did kind of fizzle down the stretch, and you could look at it as a effort situation there where they were going, well, Luck's not coming back. Like the moment where they basically went, Luck's not coming back this year, you could just kind of see the air come out of the tires for that entire team. So I can kind of see where Fleener's coming from.
What do you think, Gary? Are you more on Fleener or Freeman's side here?
I think for me, I'm on Fleener's side. I just can understand where he's coming from on that, and just the way that the team just kind of handled everything last year. I definitely kind of understand where he's coming from. So I've got to be on his side on that one.
I just think, honestly, you shouldn't talk about those kind of things, just me personally.
But, yeah. Yeah, I get it. And, you know, but I think also players just kind of want to put some of their frustrations out there, even though they shouldn't do that. I think that was the perfect opportunity, saying, hey, I don't have to worry about this anymore. I can open my mouth and feel free.
Yeah, unlike Brock Osweiler, who sounded like a friggin' robot every time he asked him a question in the press conference. But, you know, at least be honest. You weren't happy about getting benched. Friggin' say it, dude. Mm-hmm. Right after we did the podcast, Prince of Mukamura signing with the Jags. Only a 1-year deal, though. I think who was it? Was it you, Randy, that said Jags win the AFC South? I think they just added more to that.
Yes. Just, I mean, they're adding a lot of pieces to the defense, which they really needed help on. Now, if they do the draft smartly and, you know, they can start. They still have to work as a team, but I could really see them winning that division.
What do you think? I mean, he was the one standout guy from the Giants, Gary.
Yeah, he was, and he's a really talented player, and I think he's definitely going to add to that franchise. And the Jags are rocking right now. I'm with Randy on the fact that if they can draft well, if they can make some smart decisions. Free agency also is not over. I'm not saying that they're going to do a lot of more big signings or do anything like that, but if they can wisely go through and pick off some of these veterans maybe that are out there just kind of lingering and get some more guys with experience on the team along with a lot of the young players that they already have, especially these guys coming out of the draft, this team is a contender. And I think the rest of that division needs to wake up and understand, hey, these are guys that are not going to be fun to play.
Yeah, certainly not. No, I think that pretty much does it for like the big-time ones. I mean, you got Zach Miller re-signing. The Patriots could wind up with – they already signed Chris Hogan. They're looking at Nate Washington. So I would consider that an upgrade over LaFell and whoever else they had.
Mm-hmm. Washington's been a great player. He has. He's not been in great situations, but he's a standard guy. He's not like, you know, maybe a top number two receiver, but I think he's definitely serviceable, and I think he's a guy that, you know, can help the Patriots. And a guy like Tom Brady getting into the ball, let's be honest, Tom Brady will probably turn that guy into a top number two.
And if they get Chris Long for not too expensive, Randy, that's only going to help their defense get even better.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I think that about does it for all the free agent stuff that's happened since last time we did the podcast. I don't think that there's anything like totally major other than that, so we can go ahead and get started with talking about these teams here, which the first one up is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and one of the newbies, the last word on sports, Dalton Tompkins, he actually lives in Texas, Gary. Hmm. And so we will start with Tampa Bay, and that was about a 16-minute interview or so. And he talks about some of the new signings, some of the signings that they've retained, and the season, and a few other things. So, Dalton Tompkins talking about the Bucs. Here we go. All right, so here doing the first interview for the podcast today. With me here is Dalton Tompkins. He just started writing for Last Word on Sports. How long have you been a Tampa Bay Buccaneers fan?
Well, it started when I was 12 years old, right before the start of the 2001-2002 season. My dad asked me who I thought was going to, you know, win the Super Bowl, and I was really into football, and so I was, you know, all in the stats and researched everything, and I, at that time, I was really neutral. I didn't really have a team. My mom was a big-time diehard Cowboys fan, and all I knew is I hated Dallas, so I was ready and willing to jump ship for any other team, but that year I picked the Buccaneers to beat the Raiders in the Super Bowl, and that's exactly what happened. So ever since then, I've just been a Bucs fan.
That's a cool story. At least you know, you picked the team, you stayed with them, so certainly didn't bandwagon or anything.
Right, yeah. I've been riding, you know, tough with them all through the hard years and everything, so hopefully they'll get back to it.
Yeah, well, I mean, this 2015 season for them was a very, you know, I'd say a strange one. You know, the team wasn't doing that great for a little bit. Then they kind of found a groove and they started getting better. And Jameis Winston certainly was a part of that. I mean, a lot of people had questions about him being the number one pick and everything. How do you assess his first year?
I think you summed it up pretty well. You know, he started rough, but I think that's to be expected with any rookie quarterback. I feel like Jameis is more of, or he will become more of the traditional style quarterback in the sense that they grow so much from year two and three, you know, that first leap after year one is really going to determine their growth chart, their growth pattern, if you will. And I think that Jameis himself is a bit of an outlier just because you look at the last 5 years with super athletic quarterbacks, you know, a la Cam Newton and RG3, for example. When they first both came into the league, it was, you know, can their college style fit into the pro system? And they didn't learn quick enough to run the pro style offense. So their coaches just basically had to learn on the fly how to throw college plays here and there. And so their growth, especially in Cam's case, his growth really hadn't happened until after year three and four. And RG3 just, you know, the injuries plagued him. But I think that Jameis has the chance here to showcase what he can do just because his rookie year, over 4,000 yards and 22 touchdowns. And the Bucs really are probably the best 6-10 team, if there is such a thing.
Yeah, certainly they were very close, you know, to make it in the playoffs last year. That being said, they were so close, and then you get the surprise firing of Lovie Smith, and then it kind of came out that pretty much they knew they wanted Dirk Koetter to just be promoted and everything.
Right.
So what did you think of Lovie Smith getting fired?
In one word, it was disrespectful, and that's saying it politely. I think that a lot of people in the business really took that one hard, and there was even a lot of comments publicly by other coaches that wasn't right. And I kind of compare it to the Blatt firing in Cleveland for the NBA. You know, it's like he wasn't doing anything horribly wrong to justify the firing, and the team was kind of growing and showed potential. And in the last few games, especially in the Bucs case, they had shown growth, and it looked like, you know, maybe next year there was going to be a jump. And people had optimism. Me as a Bucs fan, I had optimism just going into the last game of the season. I didn't even need to watch the game just because I knew that Lovie had him on the right path. And so it was strange to see, but I think you nailed it. Koetter was the man from the beginning once he even got there. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. It's going to be an interesting thing because, you know, Lovie Smith was supposed to be a defensive guru. The defense was up and down last year, but a lot of your moves have been, at least lately, have been defensive. You know, Robert Ayers and Brent Grimes, and I think today, didn't they sign someone?
Conte. We got Chris Conte, and I think he'll be fine. He'll shore up the secondary for sure. Their defense, to me, was all really on Lavonte David. And you're not supposed to single out one player, but he was supposed to be given more responsibility going into last year, and he was. And I don't think he shouldered it right, and you could tell the defense was in scrambles pretty much from the beginning of the year. But I think towards the season, like I had suggested earlier, they had shown signs, and he had really stepped up and turned his game around and got back into that 2014 form. And I think that that's going to be the key. If he and Gerald McCoy can really shore up that front seven, I think it has the potential, or this defense does, to really grow and maybe sneak into that top half of the league.
Have you been able to watch Frank? I mean, I get to see him here a lot in Miami. Have you gotten to watch a lot of Brent Grimes or even Robert Ayers? I mean, Robert Ayers got kind of hurt towards the middle of the season, so his production wasn't there all last year. But have you gotten to watch any of – you know, the new guys you brought in play, or?
Well, I think Ayers, the injury, I was wanting to go back and look at some of the prior tape on him just to kind of see where I feel. But Grimes, I really liked that signing. We might have paid a bit too much for him, but I'm not concerned with that. I think that his playmaking ability alone, just when you see certain plays on film, he can really take over a game with just a couple plays. And that kind of impact on a team can really give a boost with just the morale and the confidence going into a season. And as long as he can stay healthy, which he hasn't had much of an issue in his career, but I feel like guys who are a little slight and maybe a little smaller, they're always a little bit more of a concern injury-wise. But I really like that signing overall.
All right, fair enough. I mean, it looks like I think it's a cornerback from the Vikings that you got today, Josh Robinson or whatever.
Oh, but, yeah. I did see that one right before we got on here, but I haven't even heard of him prior to today. So I'm really going to have to jump and look over some tape of him, but that kind of sounds like a depth or special teams player right there. But, you know, with the Bucs, you never know. Some of these guys, they sign like that, could – end up playing a pivotal role on the team.
So is there anything that a position that you feel you still need that hasn't been addressed? Obviously, you know, the key was defense coming out of last season. You know, you re-signed Doug Martin, so you've got that, your backfield back intact. You have, the pretty good receiver core that you already had. I do remember the offensive line sort of being an issue a bit. I know they signed one offensive lineman, but any other positions that you feel like need to be covered in this offseason?
Well, I will say the line is probably priority one on offense, just because protecting your young asset at quarterback has to be at the top of your list whenever you're the Buccaneers, because – you know, as we alluded to earlier, you just got rid of Lovie Smith, and he was a well-respected guy, and no one really agreed with the move at the time, even though now we're kind of growing on Dirk Cutter. You really need Jameis Winston to stay healthy and grow, like I was saying earlier. If he can just grow and continue on his trajectory, I think that there's all the opportunity in the world for that team to succeed. But the line has to be fixed and addressed in the draft, which I'm sure it will be. But to me, low key, I would really appreciate another wide receiver, just because Vincent Jackson might be on his last legs. He showed a little bit of sign of life last year. Mike Evans, though, for a guy on his second season to have 74 catches, over 1,200 yards, and only three touchdowns after, you know, having double digits the year before, I feel like if you get a Roddy White or a Mike Wallace, who are both still available, or even take your second round pick and get a guy who with some speed to open up that offense, I think that will give Mike Evans the chance to grow as well with Jameis Winston.
Yeah, I mean, Mike Evans obviously had a case of the dropsies a lot last season.
Which
probably was the reason he didn't catch a lot of these touchdowns. And if I remember right, he had a few called back that were as well, that weren't his fault. He at least tried to catch those. But so you have, you know, you did get Chris Conte back. You have a few, I mean, two former Cowboys, Sterling Moore and Mike Jenkins as unrestricteds, Daquan Bowers, Bruce Carter, also former Cowboy. Bruce Carter was making rather a lot at this point.
Right.
Do you think any of these guys, would you want to bring them back based on what you've seen, or kind of just start new with this defense?
Sterling Moore is a guy that I think if we can get him back, being from Dallas, I hear a lot of the buzz. And I remember going into last year, I think it was, in training camp, he had really opened some eyes, you know, at practice, and he even covered Dez real nice a few times. So I think he's a guy to look for after those prior Cowboys that you were talking about. But we'll see. With Carter, I don't think there's much of a market for him, so I think that if he does come back, it'll be really cheap, which will be nice for the Bucks. So those are definitely some guys to keep an eye on, just because the Bucks are always looking to shop cheap.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's kind of just a thing you want. You don't want to have to spend a ton of money for guys and they don't work out, you know. So, I mean, you got to hope for the Giants, all this money they just paid, that between Vernon and now I can't remember the guy from the Rams, between those two, they do what they're supposed to with all that money. But
yeah, I feel like the Giants definitely overpaid for a few players, and I heard something the other day that I really agree with on the radio. Whenever you see a team overpay in free agency, for multiple players, it's really a lack of draft and scouting analysis, if you will. These people who get fired and lose their jobs because they have poor drafts, it's all vindicated. It's all justified, because what they do to a team and what a bad draft can do to a team over a several year period, that can change a franchise dramatically. And I think that's why you see the Giants overpay for players during free agency, because they know time's running out on the Eli Manning window. And if they want to squeeze one more out of him, they got to get guys now.
Right, exactly. And I agree. I totally see what the Giants are doing. I mean, also they want to vindicate the dropping of Tom Coughlin. That's another story. So when you look at the offseason, say we're going now into training camp. This offseason is now over. The draft is over. When you look at it, you say, okay, we had a successful offseason because these three things happen. It can be either moves. You can include moves that have already happened, but what would you say is a successful offseason for your team?
Wow. The Bucks, they have a lot of holes they really need to address. And looking at their team, I think we hit on it. They really need to shore up the offensive line. And to me, drafting at number 9 in the draft, yeah, I think they're number 9. When you're in the top 10, you really have to hit. And it's not trying to sound cliche, or I'm not trying to objectify anything. I'm just saying, if you're in the top 10, that means you didn't have a great season the year before, and you have a lot of holes, like I said. And if you miss on your first round pick, you're taking a step back, and it's not going to help you get better and improve on that 6-10 record. So they really have to hit. I don't care who it is. They need to take the best guy available on their board at the time, and whether it be a lineman or a receiver. I hate to bring it up, but just because I said receiver, Laquon Treadwell, if he's there at 9, why can you not take him? He's probably the most impactful player left on the board at that point. And I just don't understand not taking a playmaking receiver to help your quarterback grow. But I think if those things happen, if they hit at 9 and they maybe sign another guy in the coming days to really, you know, affect either that line on either side of the ball, they need depth on the defensive line as well. If they do those things, I feel like I could be optimistic going into the season. But training camp and staying injury free, to me during that time period, that'll be the key on me being optimistic going into the season.
All right, Dalton. Well, thank you so much for helping us out here. We'll do another one of these when, you know, the draft ends, and we'll kind of get everybody's thoughts on their teams after the draft and everything. But thank you for helping out, man.
Hey, no problem. I appreciate it. Yeah, invite me back on, and we'll have to talk some more maybe about your team.
Yeah. yeah, you know, maybe we'll have you on when it's time to talk Cowboys, and you can dish all the dirt.
Yeah. Sounds good to me, man.
All right, man. Well, you have a good night.
You too.
All right, that was Dalton Tompkins talking about his Bucks. I thought he did a great job assessing everything with the team, pretty much. I mean, we knew offensive line was a problem going into, you know, this offseason here. They've picked up one guy, but I don't think they've really addressed that yet. Is that the nagging thing you see, or they still need to work on more of the defense?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like we talk about it with a lot of teams, but offensive line is where they really need to focus, whether it's the draft or any other free agents that they can pick up. Because you have a young quarterback in Winston, you got to give him time. You have a decent running game, you have to give them holes. You have good wide receivers, but they're nothing if your quarterback doesn't have time to throw it. So the offensive line, of course, is the most important part of any team, and Tampa Bay just doesn't have a very good one right now. I'm more curious just as far as Tampa Bay goes, as far as next year. I mean, because they got to get all these holes and stuff figured out. But my big question with Tampa Bay is, which path is Winston going to take? Because it seems like, especially some of these mobile quarterbacks, take one of two paths. They take the Russell Wilson path, or they take the RG3 path. I mean, we saw RG3 and Colin Kaepernick both take the downward turn after their rookie season. Russell Wilson got better. Which way does Winston go? And whichever way he goes is kind of where Tampa Bay is going to go next year.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. And, you know, I think this defense has to definitely improve. And that's going to have to help Winston as well. I think at times Winston was in some games and the defense was not strong enough. They kind of let him down. And he was not, you know, he's not a veteran. Let's be honest. He was a rookie. He had really kind of learn on the go, and he was not used to have to really dealing with the situations he was dealt with, especially having short yardage, being backed up to his own, 5-10 yard line at times, having to get out of those situations on a regular basis, where in college that was not a problem for him. He was able to do whatever he wanted to do. So at this level, I think this defense has to improve to help that offense. Of course, the running game is going to be interesting. The receiving core is fine. I like the receiving core. I think that's solid. I don't think they have any problems there. I think the biggest key, though, is really getting that defense to a point where they can at least stop some people, give Winston short yardage situations where he's not having to start at his own side of the field, maybe at least start closer to the other team's side of the field. Field position is very important to the game. Field position is very important to quarterbacks at times, especially young quarterbacks. So I think, Randy's right on Winston, but I think that defense has got to be a big key to this team.
Well, Gary, I mean, we saw a lot of these former Cowboys that have kind of become a thing for the Tampa Bay Bucks, at least last season. I agree with him. I really liked Sterling Moore last year for the Bucks. I thought he was one of those underrated guys that maybe I think the Cowboys really liked him. They just couldn't keep him with the other players they had. And, Mike Jenkins was kind of what he was. I thought he improved with the Bucks too. But what did you think about those guys and him really putting over Mr. Moore there?
I was, of course, I follow the Dallas Cowboys very closely, and I follow Sterling Moore, and the fan base in Dallas really loved Sterling Moore. They thought a lot of him. Coaching staff was not on that same boat. They liked him, but they saw some things with Sterling Moore. They saw some of the weaknesses in his game. I think he's a decent corner. I think he's definitely great at what he does in slot. He's a great slot corner. But, he does have some moments and he has some issues there. I do like him. I may not be a fan of him as much as he is. I do like Sterling Moore, though. I think he's definitely serviceable and he'll get them through games. But you definitely can't depend on this guy to be one of your top corners. He's great in this slot, but you don't want to put him on the outside.
Fair enough. Anything else you guys think we need to cover on the Bucks here?
I think we pretty much covered it.
I mean, I think they're already in good shape with this. I mean, if you, like you mentioned, you know, McCoy and Levante David are kind of your stalwarts. If you get pieces around that, improve that defense, maybe get an offensive lineman in the draft that you can really count on. I mean, those are obviously, you know, come as you go kind of things. Sometimes you draft a guy and he turns out to be a bust, but hopefully at that number nine spot, whatever they go with, it turns out well for them. And the team could be dangerous. I mean, that NFC South is going to be interesting with, you know, the Panthers the way they are. And, you know, the Falcons, they're either going to get better or they're going to get worse. And the Saints are kind of in that same boat. So the Bucs is certainly, I remember in the season preview, we had a guy, only appearance he ever made, make a big deal about thinking the Bucs could win the division. And they almost made the playoffs last year. So you imagine they can't fall too far off from that. But we move on now to talk about the Super Bowl runner-up Carolina Panthers. And doing that here is our dear friend Robert Cooper, who I really apologize. He likes to ramble. And so he talks about things that have nothing to do with football at times. But it's kind of what you get with Robert. When he wants to give you good information, he'll do it. When he wants to talk about other things and make jokes, that will happen too. And sometimes, just knowing him, it's hard not to want to carry on with the joke. And that happens. So I apologize.
It's a good thing I wasn't on this interview. It would have been a lot longer and a lot more jokes than football.
Yeah, we would have been 45 minutes of Gary and Robert just joking back and forth. But
yes.
It also has been like a long time since I've talked to him in any capacity. He's usually like a regular on the video games podcast. And he's gotten so busy with school and everything that just hardly get to speak to him at all. So if you hear me discussing about cats for about a minute, just disregard that. But anyway, here we go. Robert Cooper talking about his Panthers. All right. I am here for the second interview of the podcast tonight. And I'm here with the always boisterous Mr. Robert Cooper. It has been forever, man. What is going on?
Well, you know, it's been a good time. Watching anime, playing the occasional video game, punching things in my room as the Carolina Panthers shit the bed like only they can.
Yes, that is the image that we get left with for that season. But how long have you been a Carolina Panthers fan?
How long have there been Carolina Panthers?
Since 95.
Exactly.
Okay. So, I mean, yeah, you know, you're the one that had to sit there and watch as your Panthers get beat in the Super Bowl, the worst way to end the season. I get, well, it depends. I mean, it depends on, you know, how you look at that, whether it's the worst way, as in you get beaten that in the big game, or it's a great season because at least you made it there and, you know, 30 other teams cannot say that they did that.
Yeah, but the Bills did it 4 years in a row and we're still making fun of them. The Eagles, too. So it's one of those, I'm happy they got there. I was really happy to be along for the ride and get to see all the bandwagon or Fairweather fans show up as the season progressed. But it really blew, especially when you consider that the Super Bowl itself was a defensive affair where the Panthers just got dismantled. And then their defense just didn't produce the turnovers that they were accustomed to during the season. Because there were, like, four balls they could have intercepted easily. And it didn't happen that way. And, yeah, I mean, there's some referee shenanigans, but it's fucking sports. There's going to be referee shenanigans everywhere. I guess that's good Peyton Manning got to go out on a win. Even though that guy, I think, I don't know who would probably play a worse game of football right now. Peyton Manning, like, towards the Super Bowl win, or Ryan Leaf in the prison system.
God. This is terrible visual. But, you know, yeah, I mean, Peyton Manning, certainly he was not the reason that he won that.
Hey, dog.
Yeah, gotta love the dog that gets jealous if anything touches me. If my kid comes over here and gives me a hug, he starts barking like, you know, the world just ended or something.
It did.
How's the cats?
Cats are pretty good. All 18 gajillion of them, so pretty good. Yeah, some of them have been sick, but it's been whatever. The funny thing about it is some of those times at the vet, because we have a pretty good vet, but it's about 3 hours to sometimes the wait time. So I will bring like multiple volumes of manga. And just a side note before we get back on the sports, really good manga that you should totally check out sometime. It's called Eagles, The Making of an Asian American President. It was written in the late 90s, and it's about a fictitious Democratic candidate who's Japanese American trying to become president of the United States. So if you ever love you some late 90s politics, or if you just like the West Wing, there you go. It's like 10 volumes long. Well, more 5 big ass volumes.
It can't be any worse than today's politics. So
it's actually really well written. You know, there's of course plenty of the one thing that I kind of laughed at was there's he won Texas by going to, I think it was some big-ass steakhouse or something. I think it's pretty famous. I can't remember the name of it. I don't live in Texas. But he went there every night and talked gun control. And his stance on it was won them over and got one of the big ranchers on his side. So he ended up winning all the delegates in that state for the Democratic convention. And I was just sitting there laughing. I'm like, there is no way an Asian-American Democratic candidate can show up at a Texas bar at 2 in the morning for a week straight and not end up dead. Especially talking gun control.
Yeah, especially. So, yeah. Getting back to the Panthers here, so, you know, a lot was made of, you know, Cam the whole year having that tremendous year being the MVP, and then, you know, with all the flash and substance he brings, you know, kind of almost getting it put back in his face there at the end by losing. I mean, what are your thoughts on the whole Cam, the way he is, and how that translates? Do you put some of that on Cam, the team there, the way they played in the game in the Super Bowl, or is that on the defense? What do you think?
I still have to bitch at him not diving for that ball in the fourth quarter. With his explanation was, man, I didn't want to get injured. I'm like, dude, it's the fucking Super Bowl. Go for it. That really kind of frustrated me as a fan. I put some of it on there because, like it or not, really, he was the focal point of the offense. Because if you looked at his receiving core, it was a who's who of who the hell is that? So, when they took Corey Brown out, which that was pretty damn dirty, that was pretty much the death knell. Because Ted Ginn wasn't producing all that well. Jericho Crotchery was more or less non-existent. Greg Olsen did a good job, you know, being Greg Olsen. But overall, we were definitely missing Kelvin Benjamin. And overall, that Super Bowl loss, I would say it was, I mean, it's a team effort. The defense played well, but not well enough. The offense didn't play well at all, really. It was not good. They contained Cam really well, which, you know, it kind of hurt. But the way I look at Cam is the same way I look at a guy like Richard Sherman, who I can't stand Richard Sherman because he's not on my team. Same thing goes with Josh Norman. Like, guys like that, they're like, you know, really flashy, like run their mouth and stuff. Like, if they're not on your team, you tend to kind of hate them. So I can understand a lot of the disdain for the most, you know, for those players from other teams. But at the same time, I'm like, I mean, they're not vicious, usually. Even though I have a coworker from New York who has New York Giants tattoo and worships the ground that Odell Beckham walks on. And that dude, you should have seen him the next week. Just, oh, it was dirty. You know, Odell was provoked. He was, You know, they should have got rid of Norman first. And that would have never happened. Odell could have won it. I'm just sitting there, I'm like, shut up, asshole. You see that stereotypical New York sports fan that thinks that everything, if it doesn't come from New York, it's not any good in terms of sports. Because he's, I mean, he's a nice guy overall, but just with sports, he's just, it's one of those who are like, dude, just shut up.
Because New York has so much great things to be happy about right now.
Oh, yeah.
Sports fandom.
Yeah. I mean, but, they're blowing everybody away, including Jason Pierre-Paul's hand.
Oh, you gotta go there.
Hey, I haven't been on in a while. You know, Richie Incognito is back in the league, so I can't really use that one anymore. I gotta bring something back out.
He's certainly not incognito anymore.
No. In fact, I'd say he's breaking out.
Yeah, he is. You could say that. He was had a really good year. You know, at least we didn't have to take a trip to Boston Market and see Kellen Winslow. You know?
Right, yeah, because...
because he's too busy with other things.
Right, yeah. I think he's too busy moving to Colorado.
So, what did you make of the whole, you know, that whole blow-up that happened with Cam and the walking out of the press conference thing?
I understood it from his point of view, because you could hear the other side. I think it was Chris Harris is his name. Not the wrestler, obviously. Was talking about, you know, well, we executed a game plan. He wasn't really talking shit, but I can see from somebody who's honestly not a good loser. We all know that. Cam Newton's he's not Russell Wilson in terms of taking his forms. But, you know, him walking out, I'm like, you know what? The dude just lost the biggest game of what could be the biggest game of his life. I can understand him walking out. I mean, those fucking reporters are going to get their quotes later. Dude's human. But at the same time, I guess with the fact that he was so eager to talk about winning, I can see how people were really harping on the fact that, like, oh, well, look, you can run your mouth and you win, but you can't talk and you lose. It's I guess it's just kind of one of those, he's not the best loser. But we knew that. Hell, you remember his rookie year. That dude couldn't handle a press conference after a loss to save his life. I mean, he's gotten better overall, but we'll see. Next year should be interesting. I don't know when we're going to get to that, but in terms of the receiving core, I think Jericho Cotchery is finally leaving. I mean, that dude, he's a journeyman receiver who did a pretty decent job, but we'll be getting Kelvin Benjamin back. Maybe Devin Funchess can work on catching balls in his offseason. And I think maybe we just need some offensive line improvements in terms of the offense. Because if Jonathan Stewart can produce like he did last year and stay healthy, I think we'll be in for a pretty good ride offensively.
That's the only new signing you guys have had so far as an actual center, Gino Gronkowski. Everybody else is just bringing back the old group of Charles Johnson and Mike Tolbert.
That was impressive, though, what they did with Charles Johnson. I really think that does speak about the Panthers locker room as a whole, because there's not many places you can see where a guy gets let go of his, you know, what was it, $13 million contract or something like that, go to two other teams, and then go back and sign with his old team for like $2 million a year. Like, that's impressive, and I really feel like that's a great thing, because he wasn't producing, he had like one sack the whole year, he wasn't producing numbers like he had. But at the same time, I feel like he was helping build pressure, because as good of a front line as we have with we had Jared Allen, he unfortunately retired, but dude was old, I want to say. With Starla Tulele, K1 Short, Johnson, and I think we'll get Frank Alexander back. I'm not quite sure who's going to be that second. Who's going to be that second in? Because we sure shit aren't taking Greg Hardy back. It's still mainly I feel like it's a really linebacker-oriented defense, which. How can you really blame them? I mean, you have the best linebacker in the league, in my opinion, the best defensive player in the league. Well, J.J. Watt's like 1B. I feel like those two, because J.J. Watt is such a presence. Like, he does so much, but I feel like Luke Kuechly is literally everywhere. Like, that guy is like a Nigerian scam artist. Like you turn around, and then he's there.
A Nigerian scam artist.
Like, wow. You have you have the second best linebacker in the league in Thomas Davis. And then Shaq Thompson, he was starting to come in his own towards the end of the season. He was kind of overshadowed by the other two, but he did a fairly decent job of keeping everything covered. Now, the other thing that I'm really wondering about in terms of the secondary is we franchise tagged Josh Norman for, I want to say, about $16 million, was it? Something like it, wasn't that? Of course, we kept him. But I'm wondering who we're going to get for that second cornerback position, because I know Vinay Ben Wickery is coming back, and he was a very good corner, but he did break his leg, and that's kind of a hard thing to come back from, because I know we got rid of Charles Tillman. I want to say, do we keep Roman Harper, or do we get rid of him?
No, well, Roman Harper and Charles Tillman are both unrestricted free agents right now, so...
I assume they're going to get signed elsewhere, but they might. It'd be nice to have them come back. Roman Harper did a very good job overall. That was actually the weakest part of our team, in my opinion, was especially toward the end of the year, was the secondary. Because, I mean, you had Josh Norman, who was like the second coming or something. He's a really good cornerback. I wanted to say Ronnie Lott, but wasn't he a safety?
Yeah, he was technically a safety. And
yeah, I don't know. I need to brush up my cornerback. But yeah. Yeah, I mean, he was overall, he played great football. And then Wickery also proved to be a very good player, but as the year kind of went on, they slowly started, people started dropping off because injuries just started piling in that secondary. And I admit, David Gettleman did a really good job of getting quality people in the secondary. Like Cortland Finnegan did a really good job coming out of retirement, actually, to kind of man the slot position. I want to say, isn't that the nickel?
Yeah.
He did a pretty good job of covering the nickel. But we'll see what he does, because one thing you got to give David Gettleman as a GM overall is that he's very good at finding players that are more journeymen, like Ted Ginn Jr., Michael Orr, like guys like that, and bringing and getting the best out of them and building and using their skills to really help build a team. Because, I mean, some of the plays we have, it's like, they're not spectacular at times, but they really work in the role that they're had, especially with the price you could probably get them at. Like, Ted Ginn Jr. had 11 touchdowns last year, which was, like, twice as much as he had in his whole career before. Even though you never, ever give the baby a pass. You never pass the baby to Ted Ginn. That's not going to end well. I don't know if you saw that picture going around the internet at the end of last year, but it was Cam Newton with like his mouth open on like a red carpet, like and that was when you pass the baby to Ted Ginn.
Yeah, I'm sure he dropped it.
Oh yeah, that dude dropped more balls than puberty. Like it was it got kind of bad sometimes, but he the one thing he really had was I think he did improve on the hands he had, because he wasn't the best, but he was speedy. Like, he was insanely fast. So, I felt like that's something that that was really in his favor. And he's going to work really well as perhaps a slot or maybe a number two receiver. I'm not sure quite where they're going, but we'll see. Because Funchess would be a really good player to have as a number two receiver, considering the amount they paid for him in terms of draft picking. But we'll have to see, because he dropped a lot of balls last year, too. He made Ted Ginn look like a Lynn Swan. It got kind of bad sometimes. But, I mean, we'll see. Overall, I'm excited for next year. I don't think we're going to go on another winless attempt, because I got really excited once we got to the Falcons. And then when we lost to the Falcons, I was like, all right, guess those old bastards in Miami can clink their glasses. That is like the most exciting thing.
For sure. It's the Panthers, I mean, obviously, you know, your Super Bowl's runner up, you don't have to do a whole lot. I mean, but you mentioned Roman Harper and Charles Timmons. Do you think that that's where you need to go in the draft then? The secondary? Get a younger guy that
I would definitely say secondary is something that you really need to look at. Also, still you need to pull the offensive line. Our offensive line did a great job, but as a Panthers fan, our offensive line has usually been anchored by like two people and then had some scrubs in the middle. So we'll see about that. I think we should invest in perhaps getting another younger running back. Cameron Artis Payne did a pretty good job as our second guy, or maybe third string even, but I remember he got injured. Jonathan Stewart is a great running back when he's not injured, but as noted, the guy gets injured a lot. Like, I'm pretty sure he like tore something sneezing once. I don't know if that's true, but I can see it happening. Secondary-wise, I would go for perhaps something in the safety positions. Trey Boston, I think he came in at one of the safety, probably three safeties, what I was going to say. He's a fairly new pick. I think they either picked him last year or the year before, but he did a wonderful job when he played. Didn't get penalties, but that's where I would aim. I'd probably aim for the safety position, maybe at the later rounds, get a running back, and try and get a good offensive line. But over all that, after that, maybe if you want to try and get a defensive end or something, but we've done a pretty good job of picking them. So we'll have to see where we go here, because I was surprised at Shaq Thompson. I didn't know a lot about the guy last year, but I think he did a pretty serviceable job for a rookie in the for a defensive rookie. I kind of noticed that defensive rookies don't make nearly as big an impact as the offensive one, or at least as immediate one. Unless you're like a freak player like J.J. White or Luke Kuechly.
All right, man. Well, I think you kind of answered all of our questions here. So I hate to cut it short, but, you know, we have to do the rest of the podcast after this interview. So, but, you know, we'll do another one of these after the draft so everybody can kind of talk about the way the team looks after that. And then, you know, we'll be ramping up for the season at that, you know, getting close to ramping up for the training camp of the season at that point. So we'll have you on again. And I gotta get you on one of the video game podcasts again. It's been too long, man.
It really has. I can't wait to talk about how I'm almost like 150 hours into the second video. And I still haven't completed the story mode. But yeah, it's been a really good time, and you know, I can't wait to do it again. Just like I think we need more of me on podcasts, even though my schedule doesn't allow it. Kind of like we need more sarcastic, snarky football analysis at the combine. Did you see that video?
No.
Where they the feed for the NFL Network combine, like something at the switchboard was fucking up, and they were talking about a quarterback they had. They're like, oh, look, like, here he comes. I think they said, yeah, I heard him singing in the shower. I don't know what was worse, his past, his singing or his throwing. Like, yeah, can't wait to talk about the next former Browns quarterback in the next 2 years.
Yeah, you just need hot takes on the combine while it's going on.
I was like, holy shit, this is what we need. Like, we don't need everybody talking about how great the players are sometimes. Sometimes we need that cold, hard honesty that just says, yeah, this guy's going to come back to his hometown in 2 years and so live off that glory for the next 20.
That'd be great, because then if they're wrong, like, the player can just go, like, remember this guy that said that about me? Look where I'm at now.
Yeah, just watch it be like the NFL honors. It's like, oh, ho, ho. They were talking shit. Now look at me. I'm so great. Well, let's hope for that guy's sake he gets to do that.
All right, man. Well, until you are on again, sir, thank you very much.
And no problem. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, that was Robert doing his usual thing, talking about a zillion things in 20 minutes. I know Gary probably was in stitches at some point on mute.
Yeah. Gotta love Robert. I do. Coop, you're the man.
So, I mean, the Panthers, they were in good shape already. I mean, they had that tremendous defense. They got back Charles Johnson. They were able to franchise Josh Norman, you know, so they kept they the only issues they have are sort of the ones of what now, even though I think Charles Tillman was gone for that whole playoffs. Roman Harper was vital, but both those guys are unrestricted. I can't those guys are veterans. There's always going to be somebody out there for them, but you have to wonder, is that what you're looking at, the secondary now for the Panthers? Randy, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that's where you have to look. I mean, they're pretty solid all across the board, like you were saying. So, like, sure enough, the secondary is probably a key. I mean, they showed signs of struggles here and there. But, I mean, Carolina was such a surprise for a lot of us last season. Now it's tough to go, okay, how much of that was momentum? How much of that was fluky? Or are we now talking about one of the elite, like, franchises for the next few years? So it's going to be interesting to see how that goes. Obviously, getting Benjamin back, who they didn't have all of last year, is going to improve as well. So Carolina is one of those teams where, like, you haven't heard much of any offseason, and you didn't really expect to.
Yeah, you know, this is the post-Super Bowl situation, and that is you're going to lose veteran players, you're going to lose some of those pieces that were so vital, but then again, you're going to add pieces, you're going to change things around, and sometimes there is really not that much of a fall off. And I'm with Randy on that, the fact of, you know, how much was momentum? How much was this just the chemistry was perfect for this team? They did so well together. Or maybe they really do have a core team here who can afford to lose a few pieces and still be just as successful. So the secondary is a big deal. I think, you know, they're going to have to make sure they shore that up, make sure it's, you know, solid. That way the rest of the defense doesn't suffer because of that. Otherwise, though, they still look strong. They still look like a team that, you know, is going to be a big contender.
I think the other one that Robert kind of hit on, I think having somebody that's, you know what you get in Ted Ginn, and certainly Cam Newton made him better. Certainly Cam Newton made Devin Funchess better. You're going to get Kelvin Benjamin back. That was a piece they were missing all of last season. But I think you could still get another receiver, maybe somewhere in the draft, and it wouldn't be bad because, you know, you never know with Ted Ginn, I think, at the end of the day. And, you know, Cotchery's gone, so you're going to lose. I mean, he's not gone. He could certainly get re-signed. He's not like somebody that everybody's clamoring for at this point. But, hey, what do you guys think? I think having somebody that at least, so you can have dependable three is a good idea.
No, absolutely. You look at the Panthers receiving core going into next year, and obviously Benjamin is your main guy, and he's also a deep threat. Ted Ginn is mostly a deep threat. Funchess is pretty good in all aspects. I mean, he can do the short routes, he can do the long routes, but he is pretty fast. And then, of course, you have Greg Olsen, who is just a beast. So what I would like to see them do, whether it is in free agency or in draft, go out and get kind of that Eric Decker type, that Wes Welker type, that he's never going to break out on some crazy pass, but he's another one of those options that Newton's going to have, you know, in that 5 to 10 yard range every time, where he knows how to find an opening in the field just to allow Cam Newton not to have to throw it way deep or go to Greg Olsen. So getting somebody like that to really kind of even out that passing game would be really good too.
He's a guy that has been definitely improved because of what, you know, Newton could have and handle him and, you know, really work the system with him well. But, you know, there's been other quarterbacks that couldn't do that so much. He had to be kind of just a spark here or there type receiver. I think Newton got more out of him. But if you can find a receiver out there to draft, free agency, anywhere, that can be more consistent, that can be a guy that could give you, you know, we just talked about the guy that I think is someone that would be amazing on this team, Martavis Bryant. A player like his talent, a player that could be, you know, more consistent like he is on this roster, would be solid. So they got to find someone like that type of player, that type of player that's going to be available on a more consistent basis, where Ted Ginn has his moments, but then it kind of falls off.
All right, anything else you think we need to cover on the Panthers here?
Nope.
I don't really think so. You know, like, I just think the big deal here is I cannot wait to see what they do in the draft, see how they handle this whole, you know, situation when it comes to, you know, making sure they're sure up their secondary, because I want to know how strong they're going to be next year. Not only that, we got the big question mark of, are they going to be the same they were last year?
That is a good question, you know. At least Robert got out all the jokes that we usually don't make anymore on this podcast. But so we got 15 minutes here. Let's do this. Let's go through the March Madness 2016 version brackets here. Okay, so we don't have to waste our time. All the number one seeds are going, right? At least past the first round, right? We don't have to waste our time talking about that?
I think so, yeah.
Okay. So, any number two upsets for you guys at all?
No. All number twos are moving for me, too.
Okay. So then we can start actually going through this. So let's start in the South region. So you'd have Kansas against who, Colorado or Connecticut?
Oh, definitely UConn here. I went into this going, UConn's going to go on a crazy run, and then they're going to face Kansas in the second round. So I'll give them a win.
Hey, they could. I mean, you never know. All I've heard about this bracket, this March Madness, which seemed to be a theme last year too, was that none of the teams are like world beaters.
No.
So
most losses by the number one seeds going into the tournament of all time. So wow. It's very much parity in this tournament.
What do you think, Gary?
I'm going to have Kansas, and I agree, but I think Kansas can beat UConn.
Okay. So Maryland, which seems to be one of the favorites just from reading things, they going to do against South Dakota?
Yes.
Yep.
Yep, for me too. California against Hawaii. Hawaii seems to be one of those that, like, some people are saying might be upset. But California is supposed to be really good. I'm going to go with Cal.
I'm one of those people that goes Hawaii. Pac-12 is improving, and it was nice to see them get seven teams in. But I think it's going to be a rough tournament for them. Give me Hawaii in the big upset.
I was tempted, really tempted to get that upset, but I'm going to go Cal.
All right. So Arizona and whoever wins one of the first four games, Wichita State or Vanderbilt.
I have Wichita State winning the play-in game and then beating Arizona.
Goodness. I got Arizona.
Yeah, Arizona.
Miami, who is, you know, this is the U, Miami, seems to be a sort of favorite in this region. I'm going to go with Miami over Buffalo.
Same here.
Yeah, I'm going Miami.
Iowa and Temple.
Give me Temple. Iowa completely fell apart at the end of the year, so I'm going with the better team, the hotter team.
Do you have Kansas moving on?
Yes.
All right. Maryland or Cal? I have Maryland. Do you have Hawaii going further?
No, I have Maryland going here.
Same here.
I have Miami beating Arizona or whoever it is there.
Yeah, I have a Miami and Villanova both moving on in mine. I don't know about you, Gary.
Yeah, I have Miami going on.
Same here, too. I have Miami beating Villanova and Maryland with the upset on Kansas.
I do not have that. I have Kansas beating Maryland, and I have Miami beating Villanova.
I have Maryland going on to the Final Four beating Miami.
Gary, who do you got?
Well, I have Villanova over Kansas in my bracket here.
Yeah, Kansas over Miami. So we have all sorts of teams going in that.
Yeah.
All right. So there's the South region done for you. So moving on to the East, we already said our ones and twos are moving. So Stephen F. Austin, I think Stephen F. Austin can go a little while. I think they start out by Wheaton, West Virginia.
I'm going to disagree. I just don't. I mean, as much as I would love to do it because, you know, hometown kind of thing, you know, Texas, no, not for me.
No, Virginia is one of the best best teams in this tournament, and they have a very veteran coach, and that's something I look at in this. So I give me West Virginia.
All right, Wisconsin and Pittsburgh.
Give me Pittsburgh over Wisconsin.
I'll take Wisconsin.
I'll take Wisconsin too. Notre Dame against the play-in game of Michigan and Tulsa.
Don't care who wins the play-in game. Notre Dame is too good. They look terrible against North Carolina, but I think it was because they were tired. Give me Notre Dame to win that game.
Yeah, I got to go Notre Dame as well.
Notre Dame as well. Kentucky, I got them beating Stony Brook.
Yes.
Yep, Kentucky.
I got Providence beating USC.
Me too.
No, I'm going USC.
All right, and I've got Chattanooga with the upset on Indiana.
I did not go there. I went with Indiana.
Yeah, Indiana for me.
Oh, Chris, kill me if you listen to this. But I got North Carolina and Kentucky going on.
Not me. I got UNC, though I am interested in Providence. I hear that's a possible upset there, but I have Indiana beating Kentucky.
What do you think, Gary?
I got Indiana.
Oh, man. So we got two Indianas. I'm the only one that has faith in Kentucky here. I've got Stephen F. Austin moving to moving on, beating Notre Dame, and I got Wisconsin beating Xavier.
Goodness. I'm the exact opposite. I went chalk here. I went 2-3. I got Xavier and West Virginia moving on.
Yeah, I'm with actually Randy on this. Me and him have the same on that.
I got North Carolina winning, and I got Stephen F. Austin going and losing to North Carolina.
Goodness. You just want glass breaking this whole tournament.
Yeah. That's where we're
going. No, I have North Carolina going to the Final Four beating West Virginia.
What do you got, Gary?
Yeah, I got North Carolina as well. I'm going to go with the Tar Heels, man.
All right, so let's move on to the West now. We already have Oregon and Oklahoma beating their opponents. So Texas A&M and Green Bay. I think we're all going to say Texas A&M here.
Yes.
Yes.
All right. Something that seems to be sort of a fancy little upset here. Duke, UNC Wilmington. I've got Duke. What do you got?
I think the West is going to blow up. So, yes, I have UNC Wilmington beating Duke.
No, I got Duke.
Texas and Northern Iowa. I'm sorry, Gary, but I think Northern Iowa is beating Texas here.
Me too.
I think Texas is not as strong team as they were. I think they win that first game, though.
All right, and I got VCU beating Oregon State.
Yep. Oregon State doesn't belong at all, especially that high of a seed. And VCU has all the tournament experience. I think it's an easy win for VCU.
St. Joe's over Cincinnati for me.
Yes.
I got Cincinnati, actually.
And I've got another Texas team going down. I think Yale, first time they've been in the tournament since 1962, I think they're beating Baylor.
I'm actually with you on that, Sean. Like I said, I think this whole bracket falls apart. So I have Yale beating Baylor to go up against a big UNC Wilmington second round.
All right. I've got Oregon beating St. Joe's. Not too confident in that one, but I'm going to go ahead and give that one. I got Duke beating Yale.
I got Oregon winning, and I have UNC Wilmington beating Yale. What about you, Gary?
Yeah, I think, in mine right here, I think I actually switched. I don't know. I got Oregon State actually moving on in my bracket, and I had Texas, but Texas in mine is going to lose to Texas A&M. And then, of course, Yale will lose in the next one. That'll be to Duke for me. And then that'll move on. I'm sorry?
Okay.
And then I have Oregon going forward and beating Cincinnati.
All righty. So I have Northern Iowa with the upset over Texas A&M, and I have Oklahoma beating VCU.
Yeah, I couldn't go quite with that upset. I have the chalk on that bottom part, too. I have Oklahoma and Texas A&M.
I have Oregon over Duke, and of course I got Texas A&M moving on over Oregon.
Okay. So you got Texas A&M in the Final Four?
Yep.
Okay. I've got Oklahoma. I've got Oregon beating Duke, Oklahoma beating Northern Iowa, and Oklahoma gets to the Final Four.
I have the exact same Elite Eight and the same winner as you do, Sean. I have Oklahoma over Oregon in that matchup.
Alrighty. So we move on to the last one, the Midwest, Virginia and Michigan State. Moving on, Syracuse and Dayton. I got Syracuse.
Yeah, Syracuse I don't think deserve to make the tournament, but they're going to move on.
Yeah, I got Syracuse.
Fresno State and Utah.
Give me Utah.
Utah.
Utah for me too. Gonzaga and Seton Hall.
I didn't want to do it. Watching Gonzaga living up here near, you know, Bulldog country, and watching them all year, they have struggled. They lost their best player, but I think they would beat Seton Hall.
Yeah, I got Gonzaga.
All right, Gonzaga too. Brandon is going to kill us. He is a Seton Hall alum. So, you know, he finds out all three of us pick Gonzaga. He's going to be like, everybody hating on my school again. I got Iona over Iowa State and Arkansas Little Rock over Purdue.
I got the first upset with you, Sean. I have Iona winning, but I have Purdue beating Arkansas Little Rock.
I have Iowa State, and then I have Little Rock.
All right. And I got Butler beating Texas Tech.
Yeah, me too.
Yep, me too.
I have Arkansas Little Rock advancing over Iona, and Virginia beats Butler. And then I've got Gonzaga beating Utah and Michigan State beating Syracuse.
I went mostly chalk here. I have Virginia beating Butler. I have Purdue beating Iona. Utah over Gonzaga and Michigan State beating up on Syracuse.
I got Butler. I got Iowa State moving on. And then I have, let's see here, Gonzaga moving on. So that is kind of a nice little treat for me. I like to pick one of those teams out of there to kind of be, you know, sneaky. And, of course, Michigan State, my next one.
I've got Virginia beating Arkansas Little Rock and Michigan State, and then Michigan State makes the Final Four.
Yep. I got Michigan State and then Butler, but I have Butler moving forward over Michigan State.
I have Michigan State beating Purdue to reach the Final Four myself.
All right, so Final Four, I'll restate it again. I got Maryland, Oklahoma, North Carolina, and Michigan State. I got Michigan State and Maryland in the national championship, and I've got Michigan State winning it all. What do you guys got?
I have three of the same Final Four as you do, Sean. The only one different is I have Kansas instead of Maryland. And my finals is basically the same thing as you, but with the team switched. I have Michigan and Kansas, and Michigan State also winning the championship.
I have here UNC, Tar Heels, facing off against Butler. But Butler will not win. It'll be UNC, so they'll advance to the national championship. And I have Villanova versus Texas A&M, and Texas A&M train stops here. Villanova moves on. So Villanova and UNC, and since I want the Tar Heels to win, the Villanova will win.
All right, so we got Villanova and two Michigan States. We'll see how that turns out when the – technically, the game, the first four start Tuesday and Wednesday, but your brackets don't really start dying until Thursday when the second round of games starts. So you have until Thursday morning-ish to fill out these brackets. If you're listening to the podcast and you want to join our group, it is the W2M and F2M group on the ESPN Tournament Challenge. The password is wrestling, since most people in that group that we have right now are from the wrestling podcast group or whatever. So, well, hey, we did it in under the 15 minutes. So go us. See, Gary was sitting here worried about how much time we're going to take doing this.
Yeah.
And I don't blame you, Gary. Normally we would sit there and analyze everything and take like 30 minutes.
I have no knowledge. I'm doing the Paul Leeser and just going with what my want to go with.
I swear, if Paul wins this thing, we have to buy him something.
Oh my goodness! Oh, I should have just copied his bracket. He won both of our fantasy pick'ems. You know, he won our NFL pick'ems and our college pick'ems, and it's just ridiculous.
Who ended up winning the Super the bowl pick'ems? Anybody? Was it Paul again?
I can double check that if my internet decides.
Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I know he won the college pick'ems for sure. I'm almost positive on that. And I thought he'd won the NFL one, so I could be wrong.
I thought he did win the NFL one. But while Randy looks all that up, I'd like to thank everybody for listening here. We will be back with I for sure have a Saints person. He's also from Last Word on Sports. One of the longer tenured guys there, representing the Saints. I'm gonna have to find a Falcons fan, so hopefully I do find one in the 2 or 3 days that we have here, and then we'll be heading off to the NFC. Where do I want to go here with the NFC? NFC North, probably after this and the next week. We'll do the NFC East last. So if we're doing the NFC North this week, coming up, we'll be doing the NFC West in that third week there. So, yeah.
Also, make sure we say thank you to our partners, LastWordOnSports.com. And, of course, we know everybody who loves to check out podcasts. Hopefully you've already subscribed to W2M Network, which, hey, we're on now.
Yeah, you can either subscribe through the podcast feed on iTunes or Stitcher or Blueberry. I still got to get it with TuneIn. They're really, really slow. But they're available there. We have a YouTube channel. Just search W2M Network and you can find all the podcasts there if you're a YouTube person. And of course, you can also like the Facebook page, W2M Network, which basically has all the podcasts when they go live there. So if you are around and you want to listen live, which most of them are late at night, so I don't blame you at all for not wanting to listen live, but they're there on demand as well. And of course, it's going to be delayed now, but at some point, Randy will have a new podcast.
We had a special guest, and it messed up all of our technology. I don't know what happened, Sean.
Yeah, that was me.
Yeah. we recorded the whole podcast. Well, we did the whole podcast, but it didn't record, so we were going to be doing it again later this week and hopefully improving on it. Just real quick, I'm looking all this stuff up. The bowl winner was Paul. He beat me by one. The college pick'em was Paul, and I finished second there as well. And then the pigskin pick'em was actually Cameron.
Oh, that was Jace. Yeah, he was
the winner. Paul finished third in that one. And wow. I was able to win our group. That's finishing fifth on that one. So
who was second?
Second was Daniel.
Oh, okay, cool.
Mr. Anderson.
I got to point something out, too. This is kind of the sad situation. Jace joined that group late. He missed, I think, 1 to 2 weeks, of that pick'em.
Well, if he had already picked, was he on the ESPN?
Did he already do? Okay,
yeah,
I didn't know.
I'm looking now. He was on there.
Okay, maybe. Okay, I didn't know that counted. Okay, cool. Okay, awesome.
Apparently, Neville has a broken ankle. Ouch. Has nothing to do with any of this. But anyway, it flashed on my phone. I was like, oh, crap, that sucks. But anyway, thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll be back on Friday morning. And until then, see everybody later.
You're listening to Last Word Radio. Where you get the last word.